Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 26, 2014. A United Nations helicopter crashes in Bentiu, but South Sudan Army spokesman says the rebels shot the plane.
The plane was shot at a distance of 15 kilometers in this place called Tong Island, and it came and crashed in Tong itself, 10 kilometers to Bentiu, killing 3 out of 4 that was on board.
And the Ethiopian Prime Minister has strong words for South Sudanese delegates at the peace talks.
We are sending a message, a clear message, to the leaders of South Sudan. So I think the squabbling and the delaying in the procedural matters, the negotiation will not be acceptable by all means.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says one of its Mi-8 helicopter crashed 10 kilometers south of Bentiu in Unity State, and 3 Russian crew members are reported killed. UNMI says it lost contact with the plane, which was flying from Wau to Bentiu. UNMI put out a statement saying it dispatched a search and rescue team to the site of the incident. South Sudan's army spokesman has a different version of the incident. Colonel Philip Aguer says the plane was shot down by forces loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar. Aguer says SPLA forces in Bentiu are at the site of the incident.
We got the information some minutes ago.
Who is in charge of the area where the plane was shot?
The plane was shot by forces of Peter Gadid, that is force of Riek Machar, in a place called Tong Island.
And is this a civilian or passenger plane? We don't understand what is happening there. The plane belongs to which company?
That is a UN plane. It's a UN helicopter.
Any reports of casualties?
The plane was shot at a distance of 15 kilometers in this place called Tong Island. And it came and crashed in Tong itself, 10 kilometers to Bentiu, and killing 3 out of 4 that was on board. The SPLA unit rushed to the area of the crash and found that one of the passengers or the crew was alive. The SPLA force brought that person to Bentiu and is now in the hospital. And the SPLA is guarding the place of the crash. Squarely, the responsibility is Peter Gadet forces of Riek Machar.
Among the 3 who are dead, are these South Sudanese or foreign nationals?
They are foreigners, all of them foreigners.
Do we know the nationality of these foreigners by now?
No, it is only the UN. We are waiting for UN to get out in the reports.
And how does this play out in the backdrop of the fact that yesterday the government delegation and the rebels signed a matrix on a cessation of hostilities, ending fighting in South Sudan?
2 days ago, the same forces of Peter Gadid kidnapped 8 of IGAD monitors, and out of 8, one was killed. And they took them hostage, including the pilots. And after negotiation with the IGAD, they were released. The continuation of violations on the side of the rebels is clear. The rebels are not adhering to the call of international and regional community to accept peace or ceasefire.
That's South Sudan's army spokesman, Colonel Philip Aguer. South Sudan in Focus attempted to reach the rebel spokesperson for comments, but he was not taking our call. The South Sudan government and opposition delegates signed a matrix that outlines how the 9-month-old cessation of hostility agreement will finally be put into action. According to the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, the Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, who is also the chairman of the IGAD, which has been mediating the South Sudan peace process for the past 9 months, says it will take action if the agreement to end the conflict fails again. Iskander Frio reports from Addis Ababa, where the matrix was signed.
For a peace process that has glimmers of hope and a lot of disappointment, the news from the National Palace in Addis Ababa seems encouraging. Speaking after a closed session of IGAD heads of state and government, which included consultations with leaders of the South Sudan warring parties, Hailemariam announced that IGAD will make sure that key agreements are stuck to this time.
Number one, the matrix of the cessation of hostility, which is an implementation matrix based on the cessation of hostility agreement signed earlier. But otherwise, the leaders of the IGAD region has put in place principles of issues pending now in the negotiation process and put a timeline for the negotiation.
IGAD expressed its disappointment that a 60-day deadline to form a transitional government for South Sudan had been missed. That deadline came and went on August 10th, with no progress made toward forming a new government. This time, Hailemariam says, stakeholders have 45 days to negotiate the details and form the new government. If they miss the deadline again, Hailemariam says, IGAD will take action.
Failing to do so will have a consequence. That's what we are sending a message, a clear message, to the leaders of South Sudan. So I think the squabbling and delaying in the procedural matters, the negotiation will not be acceptable by all means. And therefore, the leaders are committed to see that the principles they set forward in this meeting will be respected. If not, then the region will take its own action.
In a statement released in New York, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon calls on both parties to immediately implement the agreement and uphold their commitment to establishing a transitional government of national unity. The Secretary General praised IGAD for what he calls its tireless efforts to find a peaceful resolution to the crisis in South Sudan, and said the United Nations fully supports the IGAD-led peace process. For VOA News, I am Iskander Frew in Addis Ababa.
The European Union mission in South Sudan is calling for greater freedom of expression and media rights in the country, where a radio station was shut down last week and several journalists have been detained or harassed. In a statement released in Juba, the EU mission calls on the government of South Sudan to, quote, allow freedom of expression and to end intimidation, harassment, or censorship of any kind, unquote. The statement was released shortly after the closure of Bakita Radio and the detention of journalists working for the station. The journalists were all released, but the director of the station says the government has ordered Bakita Radio to stop airing political programs. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio spoke with Vincent Dubois, the chargé d'affaires of the EU mission in South Sudan, about the call for media rights to be respected. Dubois says freedom of expression is especially important during times of conflict, such as in South Sudan.
The European Union believes that a free and independent media is a cornerstone of an open and democratic society. Yet today, in a context of conflict, human rights abuses and crimes committed against the civilian population, freedom of expression continues to be restricted in South Sudan. On August 16th, security forces raided the offices of South Sudan's Catholic Bakita Radio and briefly arrested several journalists, reportedly because the station broadcast a rebel version of a major attack on Bentiu the previous day. The three journalists who were detained presented an apology, but the station is not yet back in air. And this is not an isolated event. Together with the other EU missions, we felt it was important to call for freedom of expression and freedom of the media to be respected in South Sudan.
There was the incident on Friday in Wau where two journalists were arrested and brought to Juba. Were you guys aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware of that one.
And do you have any message for the government of South Sudan?
Certainly. I think it's important to underline the importance of a free and independent media. All individuals must have the right to seek, receive, and impart information without interference by public authorities. Such a free flow of information helps to ensure transparency and accountability and encourages inclusive debate. The European Union believes that such debate must be supported in South Sudan, particularly at this time of conflict. We are firmly opposed to any restrictions on the media's ability to operate freely and call upon the government of South Sudan to allow freedom of expression and to end intimidation, harassment, or censorship of any kind. The president, a year and a half ago, he himself, I think it possibly was the New Year's address, he expressed or he deplored the harassment and abuse of members of the public who are critical of the government. And he himself called such actions unacceptable and disrespectful to those who fought for South Sudan's independence. If we look at the ground, the situation today is that the situation is getting worse and worse by the day. And it becomes all the more important to have legislation that will allow the media not to operate in a vacuum without a proper framework. And the three media bills, they have been passed by Parliament, I believe, but they haven't been enacted. So this is an area that would require some work.
If the media situation in South Sudan does not change, I mean, Bakhita Radio was shut down on August 16th and is still off the air, what follow-up statements or actions might be on your table?
The statement is to give a signal that we pay attention to this issue and we will continue to monitor the situation closely. If there are no improvements, this issue is likely to be raised in the relevant international fora that will discuss South Sudan. So I'm thinking in particular of the upcoming discussions of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, but also the review of the UN Plan of Action on Safety of Journalists, for which South Sudan is a pilot country. I think that will take place in November. The European Union is a major donor to South Sudan, and obviously we expect fundamental values to be respected. This is part of the guiding principles that we have agreed upon with other international partners for operating in South Sudan. There's a free and effective participation for all South Sudanese in the country's democratic institutions and processes is a key principle of the EU's engagement in this country.
That's Vincent Debord, chargé d'affaires of the European Union delegation to South Sudan, speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biagio from Juba earlier today. Civil society activists say journalists continue to be harassed in South Sudan. One prominent activist say that won't change until media laws are enacted and enforced. Philip Aleu has this story for VOA from Juba.
Angelina Daniel, executive director of the End Impunity Organizations, says right now, freedom of the press is not much more than a dream in South Sudan. She says that is largely because those in authority do not grasp the meaning of free press or freedom of expression.
Even our people and the institution and the government institution, they also want to get knowledge about what is the freedom of expression.
South Sudan's parliament passed three media laws several months ago, but they were not signed into law by President Salva Kiir. Angelina says, although South Sudanese journalists strive to balance in their news coverage, they are often harassed or detained if they tell both sides of a story. Angelina says, as a civil society activist, she too often faces threats from security agents. She says that is what happened to her earlier this month after being interviewed on a Juba radio station about where government action is needed in society.
We civil society, we are the voice for voiceless. So I feel just like my voice was not really good by that time, but it's become normal in our daily life. The struggle continue.
South Sudan's government dismisses charges that it is intolerant to freedom of the press and freedom of expression. Presidential spokesman Atanye Wegaten insists that many civil society groups and the media operate freely.
Nobody intimidates people here in South Sudan. Anybody talks his mind or her mind, because we have the Article 24, which is the freedom of expression. Anybody has a right under that article to talk his or her mind, provided that it doesn't impinge on national security. That is the only exception.
Article 24 in the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan says every citizen has the right to receive, disseminate, and access information. But Aten says there is a limit to that freedom of information and expression. Last week, national security operatives shut down the Catholic-run radio station Bakhita FM for airing stories which Aten said blame government forces for instigating clashes between government and rebel forces in Unity State. The radio remains off the air today. Juba resident Mabior Philip says the media and civil society groups have their shortcomings too. He says they play a major role on issues of accountability in government. Mabior accuses civic society organizations of not doing enough as stakeholders at the peace talks in Addis Ababa.
I don't think this is the right way. They should have been here in Juba, generating pressure for the two parties to sign an agreement, campaigning to the people, to the youth, not to join the fighting and to avoid violence. So this gives a different impression about the civil society we have in South Sudan.
Mabior says local civil society groups are out of touch with the struggle South Sudanese citizens face on a daily basis.
And for the civil society to be effective, they have to go to the grassroots and mobilize people. They have to get deep into governance issues like corruption, investigate them, and make a campaign about these issues. As a civil society activist, you don't become a stakeholder. Campaign for certain core values.
Angelina insists civic society activists campaign for core values and will continue to do so.
Everybody will live equal right, no one above the law. And social life also. We want to see the happiness from the faces of the citizen. If you look at the faces of South Sudanese now, no one is smiling from their heart because they are passing just through the difficulties all their life.
Angelina says a truly democratic South Sudan will be achieved if all citizens become actively involved in pressing government officials to be accountable and to respect the rights of freedom of expression and the freedom of information. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the GA community in Jonglei State won its own county. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the housework chore you dislike most and why?
What I don't like so much is washing utensils, scrubbing saucepans. That's what I don't like. Yeah. If you have to scrub the saucepan, your hand might be painful from the sun, or if you're using steel wire, your hand can become very rough. So I don't like that experience.
I hate ironing because it's so stressing and it's hard because you have to stretch up the clothes first and organize them. So I don't think it's something easy for me.
I hate cleaning because when I take time to just clean or wash my clothes or do anything, it kind of discouraged me, especially because I want to focus on my music and maybe write a song. So I feel like this time that I used to clean the house is kind of wasted because I should be doing something else.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about Ebola outbreak. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, has begun airlifting emergency supplies to Liberia, the country hardest hit by the West Africa Ebola epidemic. A cargo plane carrying nearly 70 metric tons arrived in Monrovia on Saturday. VOA's Georgie Kapua reports.
UNICEF's representative in Liberia, Sheldon Yates, says the supplies are needed to bolster protection against the Ebola virus.
The largest component of the supplies was chlorine, and chlorine is a key ingredient here used for disinfection, which, as you might imagine in the circumstances in Liberia, is needed in all health centers and is needed in Ebola treatment centers.
The shipment included 27 metric tons of chlorine in all.
We also had ORS, oral rehydration salts. We also had sodium lactate, which is also used to help ensure people are rehydrated. And we had about 900,000 gloves, which, of course, is also very important for infection control. The shipment also includes ready-to-use therapeutic food, which is helpful for patients who are undergoing treatment, and other basic supplies.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, helped to pay for the first flight. Also, the agency's Ebola Disaster Assistance Response Team is helping with delivery. Yet says another plane load of supplies is expected in Monrovia Tuesday. The second flight is supported by the Liberian government and World Bank.
UNICEF is supporting the efforts, making the arrangements, and ensuring the supplies are purchased at the most competitive costs. But this is a government-driven airlift.
The second flight will bring more chlorine and emergency supplies to protect health workers and civilians alike.
Health workers have suffered a disproportionate number of the casualties from Ebola. We need to make sure that health centers are disinfected, that the health centers are safe, and that people in Liberia feel free and safe to return to health centers. There are many, many other diseases, of course, that are endemic here. Cholera is here, malaria is here, and many common diseases. We don't want people dying from preventable diseases because they don't feel safe to use health services.
More airlifts will be carried out in the coming weeks to Liberia, but Yet says despite the airlifts, a lot more personnel and supplies are needed.
We really need more boots on the ground. We need more support from our technical partners, and we need more resources. I've been in emergencies all around the world, and I've been struck at how slow resources have been in coming here. We need additional support, not just financial support, but also technical capacity. We work hand-in-hand with our NGO partners all around the world. We need them to come here to Liberia, too.
Yet says the Ebola outbreak has generated a lot of fear. Buddy says medical workers can safely work in the country. He says UNICEF is taking a leading role in a multimedia awareness campaign in Liberia.
We've got teams going door-to-door in the most affected counties of the country. We've got radio campaigns going on in various languages. We've got pop songs on the radio giving the message. We've got one-minute plays that are being produced. So we're using every avenue we can to make sure people understand what they can do to keep themselves safe from Ebola and what they can do to stop the spread of the disease.
UNICEF is also providing motorcycles so community health workers can travel to many Liberian communities. More than 600 people have died of Ebola in Liberia. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The Jio community in Eastern Jonglei State have rejected being part of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, established by President Salva Kiir after signing a peace deal with former rebel leader David Yaoyao in Jonglei State. Jacob Achek has the story for VOA from Juba.
This year, four ethnic communities of Anyuak, Murle, Kachipo, and Jie were granted their own separate administration out of Jonglei State government. The Jie community, together with tribe of Kachipo and Ngalam, were later granted a separate county. Jie tribe claimed their rights have not been considered. Natabu Abraham Nyatak, the spokesperson of the Jie community, said the four tribes are not part of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
The reason being, you know, in the first place, we were not part of the rebellion. Number two, during the war, the rebellions or the rebels were launching their activity of killing the Jies and even the national army. So number three is the issue of lack of inclusivity. We were not included in the talk.
Nyitak says when David Yaoyao, the former rebel and newly appointed administrator of Greater Pibor, arrived in Juba, they hand over a petition informing him that they are not part of his administration. Nyitak said they went their own homeland in a separate county.
Initially, we welcome Boma as a county. You know, Boma is inhabited by three tribes. That is the Jie, Kachipo, and Ngalam. But now this guy that's saying Ngalam is part of the Murule. So we welcome Boma as a county, but we are saying even the county that we were advocating, we were not saying we are going to make Boma as the educator of the county. We said Kesongori is the educator of our county.
Another Jie leader, David Lonyamu, said the Jie went to control their own county.
We are not against the president degree, but what do we just know that we are not part of Greater Pibor Administrative Area? We also ask the Jie community, we demand or we request our right from the government so that it will be given to us our own county. Then it is now the Jie or the Najie to decide where they belong or where they go.
Lonyamu said Jie clans are being represented in the state assembly by tribesmen other than their own.
On the other side of Eastern, because most of the politicians, they claim the Jie belong to them, and yet none of them has done anything good to the Najie community. So we, the Jie, or we, the elders of the Jie, so we demand our right. There is nowhere we will be attached to the other community, and yet we are also a tribe like them.
Yao Yao said the Jie are demanding their position and this is their choice. He says right now the Jie community is not reporting to his administration.
The Kachipo are not part of them. It is only the group of Jie who are not finding their position up to now. And when they think they need their own county, this is their choice to find their position. Otherwise, they are going to be in the middle. It was an agreement that did not allow all of us to have what we asked.
Jie is a small tribe living in the southeast part of Jonglei State. It also has two clans in eastern Equatoria. The Jie has no representative serving in either national or state government. The highest Jie serving in the South Sudan Army, SPLA, is a person with the rank of first lieutenant. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
The Women's League branch of the South Sudan's ruling party in Egypt donated £30,000 to South Sudan War and Disabled Commission. As Simon Wawuduwaki reports from Juba, that is about $10,000.
The aid was handed over to the War and Disability Commission at a news conference in Juba last Friday. Melmor Aleu is the deputy chair of the SPLM Women's League campaign team in Egypt. He says the aid is aimed at helping the wounded and disabled in the SPLA, including those that fought during earlier clashes in Hegelej against the Sudanese army.
We have brought 140 crutches for the wounded SPLA soldiers. At the same time, we have 112 bed sheets.
Deng Dao, chairperson of the South Sudan War and Disability Commission, says many military hospitals for SPLA soldiers lack basic supplies.
They can help. Now the hospitals are overcrowded and the hospital need support. And want to thank the Women League, the students, the community that are in Cairo for them to have thought about this type of contribution they have sent to our people in Juba and beyond.
Dao says more aid is needed from South Sudanese to back the commission's work assisting wounded and disabled soldiers. He says since December, when the crisis broke out, there has been no research documenting how many SPLA soldiers were wounded and disabled during the fighting. Dao believes the number is somewhere around 3,000.
I really want to once again call our people, wherever they are, that there is a real need, you know, to give sympathy and to give support to this group in the hospital.
Dao says the commission is working on plans to improve the conditions of the wounded and disabled soldiers who cannot help themselves. He says the commission has acquired land south of Juba town granted by the Central Equatorial State Government to build a facility that would provide rehabilitation programs and artificial limbs for disabled SPLA soldiers. Dao says the initiative will cost about $15 million.
Put down a rehabilitation facility where we can produce the crutches here. We cannot get donation from outside. The crutches can be produced locally. The wheelchair can be produced locally. They can also produce artificial limbs.
For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodu in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kebas featuring Young Bo.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
We have been listening to Kebas and Young Bo with that song, Ceasefire. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Can't you want to be the hardest thing to do?